Welcome to the Retirement Lifestyle Show. I'm your co-host, Roshan Langani, here as always with Adrian Nicholson. We're back with another great episode. Adrian, how has your last couple weeks been since we're recording every other week now?
It's been great. It's good to see you, Roshan. I'm excited. My birthday's around the corner, so I'm looking forward to that. It's on a Saturday, so should be a good time. So yeah, excited that we're back recording another episode of the Retirement Lifestyle Show. And as always, just looking forward to today's podcast.
Yeah. Do you have plans already for your birthday?
So I'm working on that now. So it's about 2 weeks out. So I got some time. So I'm just kind of texting around, just feeling it out and just seeing what I want to do. Since it's on a Saturday, I like to do a couple things with the days leading up, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and the weekend, just to make the most out of it, I guess. So it's going to be a good time either way.
That'll be a fun multi-day celebration that you have.
Yeah, exactly. So it's gonna be a good time, and I'm gonna be traveling a lot too this year. So I'm looking forward to that. So just been constantly planning whenever I can, just making sure this year is lined up right and I'm prepared for everything.
That's great. A big 2024 for you.
Yes, very busy, very excited. All good things on our end, and as always, just looking forward to just making more content with this podcast. I like the trend and where we're going with it. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, let's jump right into it. I'm actually really excited to talk about this. I feel like I've said that a lot recently. I give you credit for that, for picking good topics that
Thank
get
you.
Me looking forward and excited about the episode. But I've gone to Berkshire Hathaway's annual meeting to watch Warren Buffett speak. And this, I've been to a few of them, but it's been a few years. My daughter's birthday is in May, so I've missed it for a little while, just because first it was, well, what if she's a little early? And then it was just with birthdays and plans. But after Munger passed away last year, I really didn't want to miss it this year. So I was able to go. Actually, my wife joined me. And this year, I only went in for the annual meeting. In the past, I had gone to some of the other events there. The investors from around the world organize events in Omaha during the week. It literally starts that Sunday or Monday before, and it continues on. When I'd gone in the past, there was a conference I'd gone to that no longer happens. But this year, I went just for the meeting. So my one learning, I want to share some of the notes I took and some of the learnings I had from it. But my one learning to start us off is if I had to do it over again, I would make sure I went earlier to attend some of the other events. I went just for the annual meeting. So I literally arrived Friday around midnight, and then the meeting was Saturday morning. I was there for the meeting all day Saturday, then Saturday evening just really went to dinner, and then Sunday morning woke up and flew back. And especially now that you can watch the whole thing on CNBC, it's not the same. You don't experience the atmosphere when you watch it online. You're walking into a packed arena where, it's pretty much all the seats are taken, or the majority of them are taken, and then they have overflow rooms of people watching it. You've got the room with all the different Berkshire Hathaway companies that you can walk through. So there's definitely a lot I still experienced, but what I missed was that I wish I had attended was there is still a conference where they have investors share some of their investment ideas. And I think that part where you just have the brain trust of all the different investors there, the opportunity just to speak to other investors that are, have similar mindset or thought process as you, because, they're in Omaha. I feel like I missed that a little bit by not attending in person. So that's my first takeaway. Adrian, any thoughts on that at all, or anything that to start us off that stands out for you?
Yeah, I just got a couple of questions, and I guess I just want to start from the beginning. You mentioned that you went there with your wife. I hope the travel's smooth. You got there okay. You said you got there Friday night, the night before. So I got to imagine it was a little bit hectic, or did everything go smooth? I know travel sometimes can make or break a conference if nothing goes right.
There were no issues with it aside from just getting in so late, right? Yeah, you know, because
where'd you stay at?
The morning. I just found a hotel online at hotels.com. I was like 10 minutes from the stadium. The hotel, there's, I believe it's a Hilton that's right across the street from the arena. And that apparently gets booked a year in advance. So finding a place isn't too hard. Although, as we talk about it, getting Uber or Lyft to pick you up was a little more difficult just because there are so many people in the city doing the same thing, you know, as far as needing transportation. Wasn't a trouble difficult from the airport that late, but the next day it was getting back and forth.
Yeah, and I gotta imagine that. And then before also we just dive more into the conference, were you able just to explore the city or just Omaha in general? I mean, you said you've been there before, right? Is there anything of interest that you would recommend other than the conference? I know that's gotta be a big reason why people go there to see the Oracle of Omaha. I know that's probably the biggest attraction there. But anything else you would recommend? I don't know much about Omaha, to be honest.
No, and you know, I'm actually terrible with stuff like that. For all conferences I've attended, I've been mm-hmm. to a bunch of different cities with conferences, and I normally do what I did with this one, which was fly in and fly out. I almost flew back Saturday night, but decided to not keep it that crazy and did Sunday morning. And the only thing we did was on Saturday night, I can't even name the restaurant because I don't remember, but my wife, Steph, found a seafood restaurant on Yelp, and we just went there for dinner. Aside from that, I didn't see anything else but the inside of the hotel and the airports.
Wow. I mean, I'm the exact opposite when it comes to traveling for business or a conference. I like there to get there like a day before. I like having like a day after just to get myself like ready and like set. I don't like pushing it to the last minute, but I guess that's where me and you differ.
Well, no, I'll tell you, just in my being older than you, that's one of my learnings. You're doing it right. I'm doing it wrong. Okay. In the sense of just going in. I've always just been so focused on whether it was work or as I have children, getting back for the kids, that I remember going to one conference. This was exhausting, but I had like a 5 a.m. flight out. This was in Detroit, and I had a something like a midnight flight back, and I just remember being dead the next day. But yes, I would advocate for your style of conference travel, and hopefully you'll remind me of that our next conference that we'll have together will actually be September in Chicago. Please remind me of this when I'm booking my tickets.
Yeah. Of course. I'm really looking forward to that September conference in Chicago too. I had a great time last year and learned a lot. So I guess going back, you mentioned one of the biggest takeaways you had or the first thing that you learned, or I guess what's like the first thing you want to talk about with this conference? Because I got to imagine, like you said, there's a lot of good information there. And I heard it's just like a lot of people, not just from the United States, but pretty much all over the world that like come together just to attend this conference, learn to see what Warren Buffett has to say, and I guess also just network and bounce other ideas around other, you know, passionate investors as well. So I gotta imagine there's a long list.
Yeah, and I try to minimize it. And I'll tell you, for one, you're right on about the international. So the way it works is there's a video first, and then after the video, it's pretty much let's see. 6 hours of question and answer with Warren Buffett. They have three mics, I believe it is, maybe more, around the arena. And then they have people that will send in their questions online. And when you mentioned international investors, I think there were more questions asked by people that were not from the United States than were. Wow. So there are definitely people from all over the world of interest. I remember multiple questions coming from people from Germany that were physically there. They weren't just online. Remember online questions. There was from India. I remember in person. There was, I believe he was from China, but just off the top of my head, I feel like there were more questions asked by people abroad. But what those questions are. You know, the people that wait in line really guide the conference. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, I would love Warren Buffett's insight on the current state of the markets, but I really go for learning more of his experience over time. So you'll find that a lot of my notes will be more are really quotes or lines that I like from the conference that you know primarily came from Warren Buffett, but also you know on the panel this year. So normally it's Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, but Charlie Munger passed away last year. So this year on stage is Warren Buffett, Greg Abel, and Ajit Jain. So it's a little bit of a difference. And you know, one time when Warren was, you know, passing a question on to Greg Abel, he said, well, I'm going to pass it to Charlie, you know, just because they've been doing it so long. And the crowd just sort of had a laugh and was clapping for him there. And I think he said something like, I knew that was going to happen. And he said something like, I knew that was going to happen eventually. And I've already caught myself a few times to you know, not make it happen, but it did slip that one time, which is natural. Actually, in their video before there, and they always have a great video. I remember one of the earlier conferences I had been to there, or annual meetings I'd been to, they had they were on The Office. They used a clip from it in the video this year, and it was when the TV show The Office was looking for a new boss, because Michael Scott was leaving. So they had Warren come in and he comes in like, hey, I can be the new boss. And then Dwight stands up and says, I'll be your number two. And he goes, well, I already have a number two. And Munger walks in and they're sort of looking each other down, you know, face to face. And then I forget what Dwight says, but Munger says something like, I could kill you 40 ways from right now. And then Dwight like sort of nods and accepts that he's not the number two. They actually showed that clip this year as well, but they you know, they always have that video. And this year with Munger passing, they had a lot talking about him. And I really love his, he always had great quotes, great one-liners. Munger did. He seemed to be able to get to the heart of the matter in a sentence. And he was not concerned about offending people. I think I think Buffett mentioned this year. They definitely said it in the previous year that, you know, something like, I've probably offended everyone by now or something like that. But one of the quotes that stood out to me from, and this is from the video, was Munger said, if people weren't wrong so often, we wouldn't be so rich. And what I like about that quote is that, Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett have been outspoken that they're not a fan of the efficient market hypothesis and what's taught in business schools, which is really in along the lines of, you know, the efficient market hypothesis. So I think that's what Munger was referencing, right? You take the markets, and I'm going to actually pull another quote. I believe this is from Buffett, where he said, you know, you treat stocks as a business, and the market is there to serve you, not instruct you. And to me, those two statements go hand in hand, right? The quote of, if people weren't wrong so often, we wouldn't be so rich. To me, that means, well, they've been able to take advantage of market opportunities. And when they say, when they're not a believer in efficient market hypothesis, I don't want to misquote Munger or Buffett, but one statement around that I think really stands true to me is, the efficient market hypothesis says the market is fully efficient. And where I've heard it said the markets are mostly efficient, I think that one slight change mostly is what creates opportunities. The reason I think that's such an accurate and a good change is because it's not easy to find good deals in the market or good opportunities in the market. They're few and far between. So I think mostly efficient is better than, you know, fully efficient. And when you change that word to mostly, I think that aligns to Munger's quote, if people weren't wrong so often, we wouldn't be so rich. Because what Buffett and Munger were able to do were take advantage of those rare occasions where the market was not efficient and find a good investment opportunity. How that lines up with the other Buffett quote I just mentioned to treat stocks as a business and the market is there to serve you, not instruct you. If I remember correctly, Buffett said that when he was really talking about Benjamin Graham's The Intelligent Investor. And to me, what he's speaking to there is actually to not necessarily be looking at the charts of the market, but look at the fundamentals of the business. So understand the business, and then the market being there to serve you is that the market is going to then give you a price. Like one of Benjamin Graham's great contributions, and he had many, but is that it, view the market as your manic depressive friend, Mr. Market, and sometimes he's feeling euphoria and he's giving you a high number, and sometimes he's feeling depressed and giving you a low number, the number being the stock price, and you want to buy when he's feeling depressed and sell when he's really feeling euphoric. And so that's the way I view these two quotes hand in hand as an investor. And you know, neither of these are new. You know, the Munger quote, he's passed away. So that's not new. It's from the old video. And Buffett's quote was you know, from what he said this year, but he said something like this many times. So I think another value of going to the meeting every year is it keeps you fresh. You know, sharpening the axe, you know, as will be said sometimes, that it keeps you sharp. And that's another thing that even though I wish I had attended more days, I don't regret going. I still think there was a lot of value. I just don't think I got I maximized the experience as Adrian, you probably would have, you know, going multiple days in advance.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Roshan. And I definitely like that analogy and that sentence you said, sharpening the axe, because that's important, because we know markets are always changing. Sometimes businesses, not every day, but over time they change, trends change. So it's always good to always just get up to date on the latest news, the trends, what some of the greatest investors are talking about, just so you are just prepared for whatever comes your way. And I do like what you talked about businesses. I mean, that's always an extremely important point that Warren Buffett always focuses on. And I think that's what he talked about as well. I don't remember the exact quote, but he was talking about the successor or the person that's really going to take over looking at what stocks or what to invest in. And I can't remember the exact line, but he says this person really knows business well. And you know businesses well, you'll be good at picking stocks, understanding where to allocate your money. And I think that's just very valuable, not to just always look at a stock or investment. And sometimes you just get so wrapped up on the price. But what Warren Buffett would say, there's actual business behind it. And if you understand that can help you with your investment decisions. And I'd really like to hear what his take is right now. Too bad the conference was a couple of weeks back, because right now something that's starting to get a lot of like news and coverage right now are meme stocks. And I would love to see what Warren Buffett's opinion on that, because that really does go against with some of the fundamentals and what he tries to teach right now. And for some of our listeners and viewers, if you're not sure what a meme stock is, this typically is a business or a company that doesn't have strong fundamentals. Sometimes it's being short by certain funds out there, and it really doesn't have a great prospect or good outlook. But certain online communities, social media platform, have individual investors, sometimes categorized as retail investors, that do a lot of research and look into this certain stock or investment and initiate a position. And it just drives it up, and there's a lot of momentum, and it gets a lot of coverage, and some people have the fear of missing out and wonder or not they should start position. And I would really like to hear what Warren Buffett's opinion on this, somebody that's a very value-driven investor looking at businesses where you see stocks like this that don't have that underlying thing, but their prices are appreciating. I'm sure if Munger was around, him and Warren Buffett would have like a good one-liner or joke surrounding that, just to really give their opinion about it.
Yeah. So, I don't want to say I know what he would say for sure, but I do have an idea. I believe he would basically say it's not worth your time. This reminds me of another Munger quote. He was actually talking about cryptocurrency, but his quote is, it's like somebody else is trading turds and you decide, I can't be left out. That was Munger's quote.
That's exactly the one-liner I expect.
Yeah, about cryptocurrency, but I think he'd say something similar about the meme stocks. Them coming back, and as you had said, it is a short squeeze, and the value guy from Reddit came out. I think it was this week. It may have been late last week after not saying anything for a couple years online, and you've seen the meme stocks jump up. AMC then went out, and I think they issued $250 million worth of shares or something like that. So they're taking advantage of it. But, you know, it helps the companies like AMC that are issuing the stocks. Some people are making some money off of it, but I don't imagine that Buffett would have any interest on investing in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, I mean, it'd be interesting to hear what his take would be. And I also think the timing is also something just to make note of too, and just look at too, just given where the market is today, and you're really just seeing a risk appetite sort of come back with just investors in general. And that's something too that you just have to be aware of. I think of the quote I think we mentioned before on the podcast that Buffett says is, be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greed. And not saying that it's just greed surrounding the meme stock, but where you have quotes of fear of missing out, momentum, stock prices going up, not really based on fundamentals, but just momentum driving as well. It's something to really consider and always just monitor as well, because like you mentioned too, it would be nice just to really get Warren Buffett's like overall opinion on where do you think is going to happen? What's your outlook? And at the end of the day, it's something really hard to determine, but that's just something you have to look on a case by case basis.
Yeah. There was a question asked to him where the person asking the question said something to the effect of, he gave, I think it was Buffett's market cap to GNP ratio that, you know, sometimes is now called the Buffett indicator, where he thinks the markets are overvalued versus undervalued. And he gave some stat. It may not have been that one, but he said, you know, at 99, we were X, and now in 2024, we're higher. So arguing the market's overvalued, do you believe that the markets are overvalued? That was essentially the question. Buffett, I don't think intentionally didn't answer that question, but he didn't answer the question. He basically said, focused on the 99 part. And he said, you know, I really don't remember what was going, like what was happening in 99 or specifically, but so, but he didn't say anything about market valuation. And this is not a data point. It's just sort of what I'm hearing and seeing personally. But back when the meme stocks were going crazy, you know, at the latter parts of COVID, I think is when it really was, and cryptocurrencies were also going nuts. I think there was more frenzy around the markets at the time than there is now. So if just my personal gauge of what I hear and see from, you know, anecdotally, I would say we're not where we were before. That being said, I would not make an investment based on that at all. That could be completely wrong. Like what I was seeing before is, one, you were seeing and hearing and reading about it everywhere. Like it went from the financial press to the general media talking about what the meme stocks were doing, what crypto was doing, and what the markets were doing. So I feel like that general media coverage is not as intense as it was before. The next thing I'm hearing and seeing previously is hearing talk of people just making money in the markets over days and weeks, or things like just always buy the dip and it makes you money. Hearing people have that conversation that I know, you know, don't necessarily have an interest in investing and haven't invested previously. Then you also started seeing like stories of, you know, college kid makes millions of dollars investing in this. I'm just not seeing those kind of stories right now. So if that is a guide at all, that would make me think we're in earlier versus later stages. But I don't, from a valuation perspective. That being said, one of my personal learnings in the market decline of, you know, that was 2020, 2, when we had the big market decline, one of my personal learnings is to not spend time on looking for that anymore. Focus on when I'm looking for individual stocks, focus on finding good deals and not necessarily trying or spending time reading what others are predicting the direction of the market will be, or trying to develop my own thesis of the direction of the market, because I don't think I can figure that out, right? So all that being said, if you ask me my personal opinion, I can see the points of people that are saying it's overvalued. However, we have been overvalued for years in the past, and that's continued. So I can also see it continuing up, but as I said, I'm not going to spend too much time on it. One thing, though, I think is telling, not a statement that Buffett, I guess kind of a statement that Buffett made, but they had said they're not really finding good deals right now, right? So to me, that's telling that they're sitting and accumulating cash and they can't find good deals. That's telling of market valuation levels in general, but I don't necessarily think that says that the market's at a top. What it says is it's not at the bottom. It's not not so cheap that there are tons of deals available.
Yeah, I mean, cash management is always something too that I think gets a lot of attention at Warren Buffett's conference. Just, you know, what are you going to do with your cash position? What it's at right now? Something that tends to be not as friendly and covered, cash positions compared to the meme stocks that we talked about, but it's always something too that people always want to get his opinion on too, because like you said, if he's not finding deals, he's comfortable in cash, but that's also something too that you have to just always reevaluate as well, because it's a really crucial part of somebody's overall portfolio. And when it's that big of a level, like for Warren Buffett's company too, that's also something that, you know, people always want to get his opinion on.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a ton of cash and he's accumulating that cash because he can't find the deal. So yes, that is true. He also sold some Apple, and he had a position in Paramount that he took a loss on and sold, that he took full blame for, and not, he said he made the selection on his own. So, and so they've not only accumulated cash, from the businesses, from it coming in, but they've also raised cash. But I don't think they raised cash because they wanted to raise cash, right? They raised cash because he said the Apple sale was more thinking about tax planning and taking some of these gains at a better tax rate. And the Paramount sale was because he didn't believe in the investment thesis anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. Anything else on your list or any big other takeaways that you have from the conference that you want to share with our viewers and listeners?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I actually want to go back just for briefly to what you mentioned. If you understand the business, you understand common stocks. That's what Buffett was saying regarding Greg Abel, who will potentially take on the capital allocation issues, which would include the investing. What I think is important there is, you know, going back to what Benjamin Graham says, and for everyone listening, when you're buying a share of a company, you're buying a piece of a business. So, and part of the backdrop in me saying this is Adrian and I recently met with a client that owned, I couldn't even tell you, like 30 or God, more than that, probably 40 or 50 positions in a relatively small account. And all the conversation was about trading, not investing, and based on everything but the fundamentals of the business, right? So I just bring that back because I really think this is a very important thing. You're buying into a business, right? And to get away from being a speculator to get to to become an investor, not a speculator, you've got to be investing in a business you like for the long term, as opposed to predicting what's going to be the next inflation report or something like that, or what impact that next report's going to have. You've really got to be looking at the business for the long run. I'll continue on. I just pulled one more Munger quote, and he says this, something to this effect, he has said for multiple years, but he says that, you know, their success is not brilliance, it's avoiding stupidity. right? And Munger talks about this all the time, and Buffett and Munger have often said, you know, if they don't understand something, they won't invest in it. And it's just, if you avoid making mistakes, that will lead to success, right? So take your time on your decisions on what you're going to invest in. And if you're not sure, you just don't. I'll go on to the next one just because we talked. This was Ajit Jain's quote. Someone asked him about climate change. And his quote is that climate change might, like, much like inflation, can be a friend to the risk bearer. And so the question asked to him was more about climate change and the insurances that they issue. And his response was, well, we issue it annually, so we're not necessarily thinking about what's going to happen with climate change over the next 30 years. We're just thinking the next year. But why I pulled this quote is inflation's been a lot of the talk for the last couple years, and the concern with has been about inflation for the last couple years. But as he said, it can be the friend of the risk bearer. So what do you do with an inflationary environment? And this is not advice or recommendation. This is just information and data. But they say stocks are a good place in an inflationary environment because those are businesses, and businesses can often pass on the increased prices. So I just thought that was a timely quote for right now.
Yeah, and when you mentioned his insurance business, I also was reading up about the question he got was about self-driving cars and AI and how that could potentially impact his insurance business, whether that be good or bad for it, which, you know, I'm not surprised too that that was like a question what people want to get his take on how technology has been advancing with AI, with robotics, all that. So that's also something too that, you know, whether we're in the early stages is something that you're going to have to continue to monitor and see how that will impact businesses and see how, whether they adopt it or not. It's just something too that I think is something worth looking at. What do you think about that? Did you pull anything interesting or hear about that subject or look into it?
Yeah, what I really would take from that to summarize is that change will happen and businesses will adapt to change. And so that question was about Geico, and he pointed out that, well, safety features have improved with cars, but so has the technology in cars. So there may be fewer accidents, but those accidents are more expensive to repair, and the insurance companies will respond based on their premium. So the same thing with the self-driving cars, right? There may be fewer accidents, but the technology may be greater in the cars so that if there is an accident, the repair costs might be higher, and the insurance companies will respond as far as what they'll do with pricing. So yeah, that I did catch that. That was a good one.
Yeah, I mean, those are the main ones that I had on my list. And any other takeaways or anything else that you want to go over? I mean, I'm glad like a lot of these questions were posed by people that really focus on what's trending right now, what's on the top of investors' minds. So it's definitely a conference that I want to attend. I like to just get to really know what's really going on and what certain investors, some of the top investors' outlooks are and what they're concerned about on top of mind.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I do have a bunch more, but maybe next year I won't plan. I won't be so hasty in planning, and we can both go next year awesome. When we plan it out. Yeah. A couple things. He talks about, and Buffett's talked about this for years, but about management in general. You'll often hear him talking about what great managers they are. He was asked a question about tech data, and he talked about great management. Tom Murphy, who countless people will say he's one of the greatest people to run a business, with Cap Cities. I've mentioned him on here before, but one of the quotes he had said, Tom Murphy always said the key was to find a good business, right? So if I'm really distilling down what Buffett's saying, and trying to use that to be a better investor myself, it's find a good business, find a good management, right? If you can find those two things, you're stacking the deck in your favor. And there's more than that, but those are two that started out.
What would you say the criteria for just finding good management? I guess that's a very general one. How would you kind of summarize that?
That's the toughest one. I'll tell you what I look at there is, what is management actually doing with the business and the money? If they have laid out a plan of X, are they executing that plan? And then when I say what they're doing with the money, when capital comes in, how are they spending that capital? So to me, that's what I'll look at. And there was a question asked about Occidental Petroleum. And I believe Greg Abel's the one who really broke this down well, because they had asked Buffett, I think, about his decision to buy. But it's at first, and this was Greg Abel talking about it, is the original decision to buy was over the weekend, right, is what he said. He said then the more they learned about the assets, the more they liked the business. They found that the business was able to operate exceptionally, and they had a strong CEO capital allocator. So if I were to me, that really breaks down what they're looking for in a business. And this is very basic. There's a few good books out there. One of them is, I believe it's called like The Interpretation of Financials. I'm going to look it up right now so I can give the book. Give me a moment.
Because one typically what I think about the top things when it comes to management, one thing that people look like are they buying shares? How are they reinvesting it? That's something too that comes on top of mind as well that you look at as well.
Yes. So that's that capital allocator thing. So the book is called Buffett and the Interpretation of Financial Statements. And that's by Mary Buffett and David Clark. So that's the book if you want more detail on what he's looking for. But and Adrian, as you had said, that was the fourth point, what they're doing with the money. So the first, the original decision to buy on the weekend and then learn more about the business. What that tells me, and I could be right or wrong about this, is they actually start buying during their research phase. And I don't know if that's accurate or not, but just by how Greg Abel made this decision. And that would be something different for me. I try to complete what I'll call my first research phase before I buy. And then after that, after I complete that research phase, then I'm constantly studying the business, right? Ongoing, looking at, you know, the continued quarterly earnings calls, any more information about the business, the industry. So I'm continuing doing that, but maybe they buy a little bit first and then they can, while they're studying. Then it said he learned more about the assets and their ability to operate is exceptional. So to me, learning about the assets is learning about the company and what the company owns. The ability to operate exceptionally to me is that the management runs it well. And then finally, a strong CEO capital allocator is what they're doing with the money, what projects they're doing, what when they decide to do stock buybacks, when they decide to do dividends. And that goes back to the management piece earlier. So that and once again, I don't think this is new. It's just nice to get a refresher on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely top of mind and something that's, I mean, crucial to business, because you could have a good business, but bad management could really impact the revenue, the profitability, just their future growth, which is sometimes vital for the company's overall stock performance.
And that's where if you can find that good business run by a good management team and it's selling at a good price, that's why it's so difficult to find, right? Those are the three high-level important pieces of data. Going back to what we said at the beginning, that's why, you know, markets being mostly but not fully efficient, is you need to find all three of those. And the good price, if you do have the first two, a good business and a good management team, the good price is usually because of some kind of inefficiency in the market. And it could be as simple as the market's looking short-term and you're looking long-term. I've said multiple times, I think the edge the individual investor often has is just to be being able to think long-term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way of laying it out.
I'll continue on with just a few of these quotes in my notes that I've had, not in any particular order, Buffett was asked about his investment in Apple, and he had referenced some I think it was a study where people said that if they had two cars and they had the option to either live with without their second car or without their iPhone, what would they pick? And overwhelmingly, people said they want their iPhone. They'd find a way to deal without having the second car. So, and he referenced that with saying, think about people's behavior. He mentioned that multiple times, yeah, just thinking about people's behavior. Another quote I liked about him is he had said, pleased but not satisfied is the attitude we want at Berkshire forever. So they want to be pleased with their results, but not satisfied, leaving there's always room for improvement. I think that's kind of always have how my personal thought is. I just couldn't have put it that well. You know, I couldn't have said it that well in one sentence. So I actually really, really like that. Whether it's performance in an investment of the portfolio, you know, there's always room for improvement, which is why pleased but not satisfied is I think a great attitude.
Yeah, because like we mentioned, markets are always changing. Businesses can change. So if you think about it, just being satisfied seems like a form of just completion where, you know, the markets are always changing, where you got to be pleased, which is more temporary, short term, and not satisfied, where it's kind of like completion, where if something changes, like we said, management starts making bad decisions, then you'll find yourself not satisfied very soon enough.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that mentality of being pleased but not satisfied also keeps you vigilant, right? In really anything. When you reference a company and management, well, you're constantly monitoring the management if you're pleased but not satisfied. If you're satisfied, you might just not monitor them as closely and then miss something. A couple other things that he mentioned that I'll just touch on at the end. And then I have one thing I want to spend a little more time on, but he said, find out what your brain is suited for and find the game of interest to you. And not necessarily game. He does mention bridge and chess, but he also says finding securities are the game. I think he was talking about doing what you're interested in life. And you'll find this very often from successful people. I was recently listening. I'm a big fan of the Founders podcast. Their most recent episode was revisiting Michael Jordan. And he had said, you know, people, one, he was fearful of ever needing to get a job. That was one of the things that drove him so much. And two, he said all the things that people said he did that was, you know, working so hard for basketball and so on, that was fun for him. He enjoyed it, right? So it wasn't work. It wasn't difficult to force himself. He wasn't forcing himself to go work on his game or go to practice. And I think that's what Buffett and many other successful people talk about. As you know, Buffett said, find the game of interest to you and replace the word game with career or whatever it is of interest for you, and then focus your time on that. He gets a lot of life questions. Don't beat yourself up about the past. One of the person said, like, if you had to do it over again, what would you do different? And he basically said, I don't think like that. I wouldn't beat myself up about the past. Another quote, it's amazing how many mistakes you can make, but if you just keep going, you'll be successful. So to me, that's just really about sticking to it or perseverance. So
and learning.
He
from
said
it
this
too,
right. Yeah, he said this right after finding the game of interest. But I think it goes in line with that. Find that game of interest or whatever it is that you like, and you really just focus on that, and you keep going till you achieve what it is you've set out to achieve. And you know, I'm gonna save this one. I thought I had one thing for the end, but I'll save another thing for the end. So second to last point. He has said this famously, Buffett has, that if he had $1 million, he'd get a 50% return a year. And he's been asked, and I think people are looking for like a guide on how to do this. And I don't think such a guide exists, but his response, this thing was, he would go through looking at everything small. So to me, that means looking into every small company that's out there. And he had said, you've got to be in love with the subject, going back to a game of interest, not just about making the money. So he would look into every company that's out there. And I'm interpreting starting with small, but it could be starting with small, could be starting with big, but learn about every company that's out there, every business, and enjoy the subject matter of business. And the thing he said at the end that I'd want to close out with as well is a really basic truism of life. Be kind and the world is better off. And he said, if you're lucky in life, make sure a bunch of other people are lucky too. I think that is really talking about his commitment to philanthropy and you know, helping the world as well. So, Adrian, any thoughts, questions, or anything you'd add on that?
Well, yeah, I really like that last one because I got to imagine Warren Buffett, for where he is today, he's met tons of people, business people, has a large network and made a lot of connections. And the only way you can really do that and maintain them is just being kind and just helping wherever you can. I think that's very vital and crucial to just where he is today.
Yeah. And you're definitely right about that in terms of meeting with and knowing, you know, the wealthiest in society, but his last takeaway is really for anybody, right? Wealth, asset level, nothing really matters. That anyone can do that. So I'm going to take that as our takeaway and share with everyone all the things Buffett taught and share with us. But you know, be kind, and the world will be a better place. And as we always close out with, we'll be back with another great episode. Take control and achieve your goals.
Schedule a conversation with Roshan, Adrian, or Eric today at retirementlifestyleshow.com. Roshan and Eric are certified financial planner practitioners. They, along with Adrian, are investment advisor representatives and serve clients across the U.S. with financial planning and investment advice through RSA Wealth. If you found this show helpful, gained knowledge, or enjoyed the time you spent with us, tell your friends and leave us a 5-star review. This will help others discover the show. To access our show notes, to download any of the tools mentioned in today's podcast, to ask us a question, or to schedule a conversation, go to retirementlifestyleshow.com. All opinions expressed by podcast hosts and guests are solely their own. While based on information they believe is reliable, neither RSA Wealth nor its affiliates warrants its completeness or accuracy, nor do their opinions reflect the opinion of RSA Wealth. This podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be regarded as specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. The show hosts offer investment advice through RSA Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor, and securities through RSA Wealth Management, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, and NFA. Finally, our music is The Chance, by Jason Shaw and Audionautix. It's part of the YouTube audio library and it's licensed under a Creative Commons license. I am Ray Voices. Thank you for listening.